Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 40. And the child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom. The favor of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, but supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But when they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances, and when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem, searching for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. This is indeed the word of God. Now, if you were with us last week, you may remember me saying that in the Bible, we really do not have a whole lot of insight into what the early life of Jesus was like. Last week, we saw two events from Christ's infancy. We saw his circumcision and naming. And then we saw the story of him being presented at the temple when he was about 40 days old. And now in our text this morning, Luke skips ahead 12 years. 12 years he skips ahead to the events that we just read about in our passage. And you know, this gap, this vagueness about the early life of Jesus, it really has been the source of a lot of curiosity, a lot of speculation, and even a lot of fabrication. We are, I think, naturally curious about what Jesus' boyhood was like. I think most of us are probably curious as to what Jesus was like as a small boy. And we today, we aren't really the first to wonder at this question or venture into speculation as to what the boy Jesus was like. And maybe we don't quite understand why the Bible doesn't tell us more about the early years of Jesus. The heretical Gnostic Gospels, which some of you may be familiar with, these are books like the so-called Gospel of Thomas, written at some point in the second century, not by the Apostle Thomas or by any true apostle, a book which is not truly a gospel at all. It's a heretical and completely fabricated writing. It was the book that was the source text for the popular book and movie The Da Vinci Code. The Gnostic Gospels, like the Gospel of Thomas, actually fabricated stories about the early life of Jesus, and they try to fill in those gaps, and that may be one reason why the Gnostic Gospels have stayed so popular throughout the centuries. Those writings, they typically portray the boy Jesus as a kid who basically goes around, performs miracles for the amusement of his buddies, kind of like he's a street illusionist or something. One story in particular that stood out to me when I read through the Gnostic Gospels was Jesus raising a dead bird to life. All of that is completely false, of course, and the truth is, as I said, we don't know much about Jesus' early life apart from the few events that Matthew and Luke give us in their Gospels. And while we may be curious, I think it's important for us to remember the Bible is completely and fully sufficient. And so if God did not deem it essential for us to know more about Jesus' early life, we simply have to accept that fact, and we have to praise God for his perfect revelation to us in his word. But this morning, maybe we can imagine how it was that Luke, the writer of this book of Luke, became aware of this particular account from the early life of Jesus. Luke says in chapter 1 that in this gospel he was writing, he was recording for us what was given to him or handed down to him by witnesses, eyewitnesses. And as I said before, I believe that Mary, the mother of Jesus, was most likely one of the witnesses that Luke would have interviewed when writing this gospel. There are details here in the first two chapters of Luke that only Mary herself would have known. So I'm fairly certain that Luke did indeed interview the mother of Jesus. And as Luke sat down to interview Mary, you know, maybe he asked her, what are some of the standout moments? What are some of the occasions in Jesus' young life that really do stand out to you now that you have hindsight and you're able to think back and reflect on those early days? And Mary would proceed to tell Luke of two separate occasions when the family visited the holy city of Jerusalem. The first occasion is the one we looked at last week. And hopefully as we worked through our text last week, you came to see why it might be that that particular event that we read and talked about last week stood out to her. The second occasion that this family went to Jerusalem is in our text this morning. And hopefully again, you will see as we work our way through the text why it is that this event, this second trip to Jerusalem, would really stand out to Mary as a significant event in the life of Jesus Christ. Our text begins in verse 40, and the child, Jesus, grew and became strong, filled with wisdom. And in this verse, we actually have a very important truth which really shapes the whole story, the whole narrative that we are looking at this morning. We see the child Jesus growing. We see him first physically developing, physically growing. We see him, Luke says, growing strong. That's a reference to his physical development. And this, I don't think it's hard for us to understand. We all understand Jesus, the eternal Son of God, had a real physical body. A body that began just like all of our bodies, as a weak, helpless infant. A body which would have gone through all the developmental stages that our bodies go through as we grow. Jesus would have had to go through teething. He would have learned to crawl and then learn to walk. He would have had to learn to speak. He would have had growing pains. He would have gone through puberty, all of it. And I think most of us get that. And many of us are comfortable with that. It's easy for us to understand. But then Luke says that Jesus was also filled with wisdom. Now, the grammar of that statement implies that Jesus grew in wisdom. In fact, the New American Standard Bible says that Jesus increased in wisdom. And maybe this is a little harder for us to understand. How is it that Jesus could increase in wisdom? We might say, isn't he God? Isn't he God incarnate, God in the flesh? God is perfectly wise. God is omniscient, meaning all-knowing. And that, of course, is true. And it's true of Jesus Christ, the eternally existing second person of the Godhead, God the Son as well. But we must remember, brothers and sisters, when God took on flesh and dwelt among us, he took onto himself not just a human body, but the entire human nature, yet without sin. That means that when God the Son became a man, he took onto himself, in addition to his divine nature, a true, complete human nature, body and soul. Jesus became a true man. He wasn't just the Spirit of God living in a human shell. In every sense of the word, Jesus was and continues to be today, as he sits at the right hand of God the Father Almighty in heaven, truly human. And his human mind, his human nature in his earthly life did indeed grow and develop in areas like knowledge and wisdom. The ancient Chalcedonian Creed, it talks about this. The Creed summarizes the biblical teaching of the person of Jesus Christ by saying he has two complete natures, a human and a divine nature, united in one person, the God-man. And it rightly says that these natures are, yes, united in one person, but they are also distinct and not to be confused. In other words, Jesus' human nature did not have divine attributes. If he in his humanity had divine attributes such as omniscience, if he was in his human nature all-knowing, then it would not have been a true human nature. Humans, even before the fall of mankind, were never omniscient. They were never all-knowing. We were created with a limited knowledge, a knowledge which would ever be growing and increasing. And this is what Luke is talking about when he writes that Jesus grew in wisdom. In his true humanity, in his earthly life, Jesus was growing and increasing in understanding and wisdom. I think the Scottish theologian Donald MacLeod summarized this well for us when he wrote that Jesus had a human mind subject to the same laws of perception, memory, logic, and development as our own. He observed and learned and remembered and applied. This would have been impossible if he had been born in possession of a complete body of wisdom and knowledge. Instead, he was born with the mental equipment of a normal child, experienced the usual stimuli, and went through the ordinary processes of intellectual development. And yet, he never ceased to be God. He did not empty himself of his divinity when he became a man. Sometimes you hear that statement, that when Jesus became a man, he laid aside or he emptied himself of his divine nature, that he somehow ceased to be God in his earthly life. That is a heresy, brothers and sisters. And if you hear any so-called preacher say that, avoid them. They're a false teacher. They're a false prophet. Jesus did not lay aside, he did not empty himself of his divinity. As God, he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And yet, the infinite God became a finite man. It's a great divine mystery that our God would take onto himself the real and true limitations of humanity. It's a mind-boggling and astonishing mystery, but it's true. This is the great mystery of the incarnation, the great mystery of the eternal God becoming man. It's a truth upon which rests our entire faith as Christians. And it's a truth that shapes the text that we are looking at this morning. Jesus grew in both physical stature and in wisdom. Well, Luke tells us that the time came to celebrate the Passover. And as was their practice, Joseph and his family went up to Jerusalem to celebrate this great feast, which remembered the deliverance of God's people from the bondage and slavery they experienced in the land of Egypt. And verses 41 through 46 describe what happened in this one particular Passover celebration. Now, there's an interesting detail to the Passover celebration that Luke sort of leaves out of the narrative, but it's implied by noting that Jesus was 12 years old. If you know anything about Judaism, you may know that when a Jewish boy turns 13, they celebrate their bar mitzvah. It's a coming of age celebration. It's when the Jewish boys would become what is known as a man of the law. It's the age when boys were expected to begin observing and celebrating the ceremonial laws of Israel. When a boy turned 13, he would have been expected to begin participating in the presenting of the sacrifices, in actively observing the Jewish feasts and so on. It's the age when Jewish boys would go from being merely observers in the religious life of Israel to active participants, when they would, in a sense, now be expected to get their hands dirty and bloody. And so it was common for fathers, when they made pilgrimages to Jerusalem to observe feasts and festivals like the Passover, and there were four different feasts that Jewish men were expected to attend in Jerusalem, it was common for fathers to to take their 11 and 12-year-old boys with them so that the boys, in preparation of turning 13, would be able to see for themselves what was happening and what would be expected of them. It was a time of training. And so Jesus goes with his earthly father up to Jerusalem in preparation and training for the coming of age. But Luke also mentions that Mary also went with them. In fact, Luke says that Mary went with Joseph every year to Jerusalem for the feast. Now you have to understand something. Jewish women were not required to make that journey to Jerusalem for the Passover or for any of the other feasts. So why was it that this family's tradition was to make the pilgrimage together every year? Well, this is a bit of speculation on my part, but I think it's well-grounded in biblical speculation. I think Mary went with Joseph every year because Joseph knew the importance, as the spiritual head of his household, of leading his family in the ways of the Lord, of leading his family in worship. And if I can make a quick point of application this morning here, particularly to the men, to the fathers, to the husbands of this congregation, don't brush past Joseph's example to us here. He is showing us what it means to be the spiritual head of a household. Primarily, he is teaching us that one of the most important things we can do as fathers and husbands is to lead our families in worship. Brothers, we need to lead in this area. We need to be leading our wives and our children in this area. We need to be leading them to the house of the Lord, as Joseph did. We need to be in the pews with our wives and with our children, worshiping alongside of them, leading them and training them to observe the statutes of God, modeling to them the importance and the necessity of worshiping the Lord as He has commanded us to do. And I think, quite honestly, leading our families in this area is probably the bare minimum, the very least of what is expected of us as spiritual heads of the household. If you do nothing else to shepherd your family, this at least you should be doing. And too often in our society, men, Christian men, have failed at this calling. Let's not do that, brothers. Let's be the spiritual heads that Christ has called us to be. It should be said of none of our wives that they are quote unquote church widows who sit in the pew week after week while her husband is somewhere else doing something else. None of our children, children of Christian men, should grow up and say, if it wasn't for my mom, I would have never went to church. We need to man up. We need to be like Joseph and lead our families in worship. And I'm thankful to pastor a congregation where I see the men here with their families and with their wives and children. But it is a cultural trend that men are often the ones who are not leading their houses in the way of the Lord. But we are to model Christ's lordship. We are to model Christ's lordship over the church and how we lead our families. So let's take that call seriously, brothers. Just as Joseph, here in our text this morning, took this call seriously. Well, Luke continues. After the celebration of Passover, Joseph and Mary begin to make the trek back to Nazareth. And as it happened, after a day of travel, they realized Jesus was missing. Now, we have to understand this wasn't necessarily negligence on the part of Joseph and Mary. They would have made this journey from Nazareth to Jerusalem and back again as part of a caravan. And we know from various records, historical records, that in those caravans, men and the older boys generally traveled together, and women and the young children would often gather together and travel together. And then also you would have kind of random groups of kids running around, having a good time. So it would have been reasonable for Joseph to assume Jesus might have been with Mary. Mary was probably assuming Jesus was with Joseph. Both of them might have assumed Jesus was off with a bunch of his buddies, kind of traveling together. Whatever the situation was, they eventually realize he's missing. So they head back to Jerusalem to look for him. And after some time of searching, they make their way to the courtyard of the temple where they find Jesus. And what they see astonishes them. Because there in the courtyard of the temple, they find their 12-year-old son sitting among the rabbis, the teachers of Israel, and engaging with them in dialogue. Luke says Jesus was sitting among the teachers, listening and asking questions. Now, this is a popular way of teaching and learning in Jewish culture. This was the style of theological instruction in those days. It was discourse. Students and teachers would spend their day arguing, in a sense, in debate, asking questions, giving answers, defending their answers. It was logical instruction. Now, no doubt Jesus here was a student, not the teacher. You need to understand that Jesus is here learning, but he was a remarkable student. So remarkable that Luke notes that all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. There was something different about this boy, something observably different about this 12-year-old. This 12-year-old with so much understanding and wisdom. And this makes sense. Because while Jesus was truly human, while he truly had to learn and grow in wisdom and understanding, unlike all of his other peers, unlike all the other boys his age, his knowledge and wisdom and growth and understanding was not inhibited by sin. Jesus' human nature was untouched by sin. He wasn't omniscient. He didn't know everything in his humanity. But he was sinless. And therefore, his intellect was not depraved. He was able to grow, able to develop in ways that other 12-year-old boys were not able to do. So again, it makes sense to us that all who heard him would be astonished by his understanding. And his mother Mary, of course, she's astonished as well, but she's also a mother. When she finds her son, she basically scolds him, has the response that I think many of us as parents would have: why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress. We as parents, we can sympathize with Mary and Joseph here. All of us as parents, all of us who have been parents have probably had that experience of turning around in the grocery store and realizing one of our kids has wandered off. And we panic. For a few moments, we have that instinct of panic. Now imagine the panic Mary and Joseph were in, not being able to locate their son for 3 days. But while we can sympathize, we should know Luke's emphasis here is not on Mary's question to Jesus, but rather it's on Jesus' response. Verse 49, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house? These are the first words of Jesus recorded for us. They are truly remarkable words, words which reveal to us two truths about the life of Jesus at this point in his earthly life. First, they show us that Mary and Joseph did not yet have a full understanding of who their son truly was. And secondly, these words reveal to us that Jesus already at the age of 12 had an awareness of his unique identity and relationship with the Father. So first, Christ's words in revealing his own parents' true lack of understanding in who he was. Jesus' response to his mother here, hopefully we get this, hopefully we understand, it was not snarky. It was not disrespectful. It was not back talk. Rather, I think it was one of genuine amazement. As Jesus, it's as if Jesus is saying, why would you look for me in any place other than my Father's house? You see, Jesus was exactly where he was supposed to be. He wasn't being disobedient to his parents in this whole mix-up. He wasn't sinning against us. Lord, have mercy on us if Jesus was sinning here. He wasn't in the wrong. He was, again, exactly where he was supposed to be, and he is amazed that his parents weren't aware of this. He couldn't understand why his parents didn't get it. Mary and Joseph were told through divine revelation that their son was special, that he was the Son of God, that he was the long-awaited Christ, the Messiah, even that he was God himself in the flesh. The words of the angel Gabriel to Mary in Luke chapter 1, they reveal all of that. But it seems Mary and Joseph, they had to grow in their understanding of what all of that truly meant. They had to grow in their understanding of who Jesus was. Had they truly understood everything that was revealed to them by Gabriel? Had they fully grasped at this point in time who their son truly was? Then, as Jesus is saying to them, if they would have understood all of this, they would have known exactly where to find the boy. Then Jesus' first recorded words here reveal something else. As I said, they reveal that even at this young age of 12, he understood something about his own identity as the Son of God. When he says the words, "My Father," in reference to God, it was, as one commentator said, a monumental statement. It was a statement that was never used by an Israelite before this point. Yes, the Old Testament has references to the paternal nature of God, but those references are always fairly impersonal. They're usually in the plural, "our Father," and they're usually to show God's unique relationship with the nation of Israel in a paternal sense. It was that phrase, "my Father," was never used before in reference to a personal relationship. Not the way that Jesus says, "my Father," here in verse 49. And Jesus just says it like it's the most natural thing in the world for him to speak of God as "my Father." For him it was. For him it was natural. Because somehow, even in his human nature, at this age, he had an awareness that he and the Father had a special relationship, a unique relationship, a personal, deep, intimate relationship, a relationship that was different than the relationship that every other Israelite before him had with God. These words that Jesus speaks, they show us that Jesus knew God personally as his Father. These words show us Jesus was aware of who he truly was as the Son of God. And it's easy for us now, I think, to see why Mary would recount this event to Luke. Why she would remember this event. It's easy to see why these are the first words of Jesus recorded for us in the gospel. These words reveal to us the very nature of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. As the narrative comes to a close, Luke notes that after this, Jesus returned and was submissive to his earthly parents. That statement was not given by Luke to somehow show us that Jesus was being insubordinate in this narrative, but rather it's given so that we would avoid any misconception that Jesus was indeed being disobedient here. He returned with his parents. He continued to submit to them as he always did. And as he did so, Luke closes our passage this morning in a similar fashion to how our passage began, with Jesus continuing to increase in wisdom and in stature and in favor with both God and man. Let me close with this. I want to go back to Jesus calling God "my Father." Because again, it is a monumental statement. It is a statement which reveals his unique relationship to God, the Father. But it is also a statement that is for everyone who comes to the Son by faith. It's a statement that's for all who receive Jesus by faith. It's a statement that is true for every Christian. So I don't want to just rush past the implication of Jesus calling God my Father here. Listen to the words of the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul wrote Galatians chapter 4, starting in verse 4. He said, "But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive the adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, 'Abba, Father.' So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God." Do you understand what Paul is saying? He is saying that if you have received Jesus by faith, if you have come to God the Father in repentance of your sin, and you have placed your faith, your trust, your hope in His Son, Jesus Christ, then what is true of you? What is true of you is that you are adopted as a son or a daughter of the true and living God. You receive the Spirit of adoption. The Spirit of Christ dwells in you, crying out, "Abba, Father." It's an amazing truth, beloved, that you, through Jesus Christ, can be adopted into the family of God. It's a great hope for all of you here this morning. Come to Jesus, receive Him by faith, and know that you have a perfectly loving, heavenly Father who has made you an heir of His kingdom, an heir, a co-heir with Jesus Christ Himself. Come to Jesus by faith. You will have the right to call God, just as Jesus did, my Father.